Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. In 1973, five men and six women stepped aboard a raft that was set to float across the Atlantic. A raft they would not leave until the group landed in Mexico 101 days later. And no, this isn't a plot for a horror film or the first reality show. This was a real-life experiment conducted by a Mexican anthropologist named Santiago Genovese, who wanted to interrogate the source of human violence. Over the course of 3 months at sea, Santiago charted the group's emotions, and as we learn in a new documentary, attempted to goose the results by manipulation and manipulating the conditions to cause tension and discord. But ironically, the person who seemed to have the most ire directed towards them was the anthropologist himself. The Raft is a new documentary that reunites some of the participants and is full of archival footage shot during the journey, which the news media at the time dubbed the Sex Raft. Let's take a listen.
The first time I saw the raft, I was excited and a little frightened. We were going to answer questions about what makes people hate each other.
The plan was to cross the Atlantic all the way over to Mexico.
Will an isolated group of people on a raft cooperate to survive? Or will the situation create conflicts and make them fight against each other?
This is like home again. This is the raw data that he's compiled into graphs.
We were the guinea pigs.
We became like a very tight tribe. It was some of the best things that happened to me to let my heart beat for them. It was like we were astronauts being launched into space. How often do you masturbate?
I don't count.
With whom have you had sexual contact?
Many, many.
Everybody. He was a threat. The idea kind of lit like a match. Should we do it? Should we do it? Should we do it? Murder.
The film's director, Marcus Lindeen, joins us in studio. Hi, Marcus.
Hi.
And on the phone from Fairbanks, Alaska, is Faye Seymour, one of the six women who spent 101 days on the raft. Hi, Faye.
Hi.
The raft opens Friday, June 7th at Metrograph. So, Marcus, how did you first become interested in this story, in this experiment?
I read this book that was called The 100 Strangest Science Experiments of All Time. And and this story was one of them. And, of course, when I saw the headline, The Sex Raft, I immediately got so curious about this. And it turned out to be such an exciting adventure. And I just knew that I had to do a film about it.
Now, the participants were listed under a pseudonym in Santiago's work. How did you track them down?
It was quite tricky. It took almost 2 years to track all the seven still surviving participants down and ask them to come to Sweden. They were spread out all over the world, from Japan, Angola, France, and America. So it was quite tricky, and it took some detective hunt.
So Faye, let's take you back in the time machine. How did you first hear about this experiment?
I heard about it through my husband's work. He was a maintenance man at a halfway house, and the manager was a friend of Santiago's, and he had asked her to see if he could recruit somebody, specifically an African-American woman with a degree of some kind that could contribute to this experiment of his. And so he interviewed me. He came to San Francisco and interviewed me twice, well, once one day and once the next day, and he offered me the position on the raft.
What were your first impressions of Santiago, Faye?
He comported himself very well. He's obviously brilliant, anthropologist from from Mexico. He had a vision. He'd been on the Ra expeditions, and so he wanted to take the Ra expeditions into the future. This is what he was saying during the interview. And he wanted to see what would happen if he took people from all around the world who couldn't really talk to each other and took them on this expedition in total isolation to see what would happen, basically to find an answer to why people have conflict and why they hate each other.
And what What was going on with you at that point in your life that you were married, you had kids, you thought, yeah, I'm going to get on a raft and go across the Atlantic?
You know, I was married. I was 23 at the time. I had two children. I had just gotten my first-class radio telephone license, which is a license that allows you to operate radio stations and television stations. So I was pretty excited with the prospect of starting a career. And I lived on a beautiful beach in Pacifica, and my life was going really great. And here was this opportunity. My husband and I were totally into it because we love adventure. We love the sea. My parents were not into it. No one else I knew was into it. They thought I was crazy. But as far as conflict with my family, my husband, there was none. You know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Maybe we would learn something. So I was in a really good place when I was recruited and we began this experiment.
Marcus, how did Santiago find people like Faye? Because I was really struck with how interesting the people were. I guess they pre-select in that way. They were all people who you could imagine doing this.
Totally. But at the same time, he didn't want people to be, completely crazy and just like risk their lives. He wanted people to be just like Faye, married and it would be great if they had children, something, you know, being established people that had something to lose. That would be put the stakes higher and provide more interesting results. Because his idea was to kind of create a microcosm of the world. So people would represent different nationalities and religions and backgrounds. And he thought that if people were really different, they would fight and he would be able to study that.
He wasn't correct, though, necessarily.
Exactly.
And he did goose and manipulate the environment, Faye. It reminded me of, I've brushed up against reality show TV producers. He reminded me one of quite a bit. Were you guys aware that he was trying to manipulate you at the time and trying to cause fights between y'all?
Not at first. At first, you know, he basically sold himself to each person individually, depending on what they were looking for. As a young person, I had a lot of adventure, but I was also grounded. I had two children. That was my life. So for the first few weeks, early on, we didn't know that he was doing this mastermind thing on us. It wasn't until we could actually start talking to each other, where we were able to communicate with each other, that we realized that he was skewing things and saying one thing to one person and another thing to another person to see if he could cause conflict. For example, he told me that Rashida, who was the most beautiful person on the raft, you know, physically beautiful, mm-hmm. he said to Rashida that I was jealous of her. And I never said such a thing because I just thought she was an amazingly cool person. But she spoke French, so I couldn't really talk to her. She didn't speak English very well. I spoke no French. And so that's when, you know, we started connecting the dots. And this was with other individuals, too. He said, would say different things to different people, say things that I never said. So that's when we started talking to each other and communicating with each other. That was about the first 6 weeks. By 6 weeks, we were learning to talk to each other. And the language gap was coming down.
Interesting. My guests are Marcus Lindeen and Faye Seymour. We're talking about the new documentary, The Raft. So, Marcus, I want to talk about some of your choices as a director. So you had a replica of the raft rebuilt, and it's great for us to be able to see people on it, to see these past participants on the raft and sort of finding their spaces and being able to describe what it was physically like. What did you really want to get out of that, the idea of bringing this raft and bringing these people back to it?
Reconstructing the raft, I think, for me, was a way of creating some kind of memory theater that would make the participants reconnect with the past and their memories and also their relationship to each other. And also for me as a director for documentaries, which is, you know, you're usually limited to the archive and the interview format, here I could play with, you know, a much broader variety of cinema language. So I could work with movement and lights and smoke effects and really like create a dramatic art, basically, to accompany the story. So it was really it was a tool for crafting the story.
Faye, what did it feel like to step back on the raft?
You know, the shock of seeing it in that studio, this great vast blackness, to see this raft replica was really a stunning shock to me, because I felt that feeling, you know, all of a sudden went right through my chest. It's like, oh, my God, you know, it's back. And then the people who were on it, you know, I saw Captain Maria first, and then Mary, and then finally Edna and Rashida and Eisuke. I could feel the rocking. I could feel the ocean, you know, was rocking back and forth. I could smell the sea. I could see the sky. I mean, it just brought it all back, which I didn't think was possible, but there it was. You know, we were back, and we were us. We were just old. We were old us.
It was very charming, actually, Faye, to see you reunite with the others. You hadn't met for all these, you know, 40 years, apart from for all these years. And it was like seeing siblings who had been separated for a whole lifetime. It was really moving. You hugged and you cried and you laughed, and it was fantastic.
My guests are Marcus Lindeen and Faye Seymour. Faye was a participant in this experiment, The Raft, and Marcus has made a documentary about it. The thing about The Raft, which before I sat down to watch it, I didn't really understand, is it's a raft. There's no motor. There's very little interior space. I mean, I was really struck. Faye, were you ever frightened just floating out there on the Atlantic Ocean?
Not the floating part, but some of the dangers were formidable. We almost were hit by a huge Liberian freighter that was floating unmanned, right in, you know, driving right into us, and we couldn't really alter our path fast enough to get out of its range. It was just by basically a miracle of organization, flares, radio, blare, just trying to, you know, get these people's attention, because apparently what happens, these freighters leave port and people work for 40 or 50 hours, and then they get out to sea in the mainstream, and they just go to sleep, right, you know, at the wheel. They just fall asleep. And so we had a hard time contacting us, and we were actually just all standing or working, or I was on the radio, so I couldn't even see what was happening. But you just know that death is pretty close. It's going to be quick and horrible. And then there was another time when we were floating across the Caribbean in hurricane season, and we were on a metal, three pontoon metal platform with a mast, with lightning striking 360 all around us. And the storm, we were in the storm, you know, just thinking. And that we were all just sort of sitting around in our spots, watching, you know, just waiting to see what would happen, see if we'd make it out or not. We had no idea. It was very quiet, you know, except for Charles, who was kind of jumpy, but he had a jumpy personality, so you kind of tune him out, you know, because it's kind of a private
moment
here.
Yeah, Marcus, I have to ask you, how did this get to be known as the sex raft?
I mean,
why is that? Why? How did the media jump on that? I don't understand.
Because Santiago Genovese, he was an anthropologist that he wanted to study not only violence and conflict, but also human behavior at large. And sexuality was a part of that. And when he announced that in the press conference as being part of many different types of behavior that would be studied on the trip, of course, the journalists just jumped on that, and it became like the sex raft. And I think, Faye, it wasn't really clear for you before you went. It was something that you realized further out, that he was really interested in seeing how sexuality played a part of the expedition, right?
I had no idea. None. Because a lot of the interviews he conducted were not in English. They were in Spanish or French, because we were in Europe. So I had no idea that that was even on the table. It wasn't until we'd been out to sea for quite a while that I realized, when he started, you know, trying to manipulate us into sexual situations, suggesting lots of questionnaires, lots of questions about sexuality. And we're starting to think, wait a minute, what's going on with this? You know, because this is not what I signed up for. It wasn't what I was thinking was going on. But of course, you realize, okay, it's science. So of course he's interested in everything. But I thought he started skewing a little bit far on that path, since obviously we were like siblings, which he didn't understand. He thought once we were cut away from our responsibilities and, you know, land and our loved ones, that we would behave in a different way. Well, he behaved in a different way, but the rest of us behaved like ourselves, pretty much.
Marcus, was it science? That's the question.
I mean, I think it
was. Given all the manipulation and he put women in charge with the idea that it would anger the men, there was just, he played with the controls so much.
I mean, it was science because he was a scientist, and it was really like it was supported by the biggest university in Mexico and so on. But I think it was a science from the 70s. You know, like there were, you know, there were like wild experiments with like clearly like ethical issues going on.
Clearly,
and this was one of them. And it's just such a great story.
So Faye, what impact did this have on the rest of your life?
Excuse me. You know, it really did change me. Having been on a scientific experiment with these people, learning about them and living with them, changed the way I saw people. Uh-huh. It was my first time as an adult being handled, or somebody trying to handle me like Santiago. So I've never seen men in power the same way. I look at them differently. With more circumspect, you know, mm-hmm. I analyze their motives when I hadn't before. The closeness of the people, you know, loving people that you just met quickly.
Yeah,
it's a, you know, the racism, you know, how to deal with it, how to navigate those ugly waters, helped me survive a career, you know, long career in a field that I was not welcome, you know, technical.
Yeah.
IT, you know, radio, telephone,
Faye.
TV stations.
We're running out of time, but I wanted to have the time to say thank you for being with us.
Okay, thank you so much.
Marcus,
I love you.
I love you too, Faye.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.